Welcome to the Front Row Back Row podcast presented by Physiogrowth. We're your hosts, Brian, who scaled a PT practice from the trunk of his car to six locations, and Owen, who helped lead an eight-figure exit and now runs a cash-based PT practice. This show is real conversations from owners actively building with what's working right now. All right, so today we are going to be talking about retaining employees. So this podcast is a podcast put on by two business owners, physical therapy business owners. Brian has six clinics worth of PTs that he is working with and who are employees of his. Now, right now, I have my own cash PT place. I don't have an employee, but before all of this, I had about 45 PTs under me, and I participated in the hiring of about 100 PTs over the course of my 8 years with my previous employer. So I think this is a conversation that is hitting a lot of PT owners hard in the last few years specifically. You know, if you've spent any amount of time, I mean, if you're someone listening to a PT podcast, you probably already know the fact reimbursement's down, cost of living's up, owners are getting squeezed, right? We can't just say, here's a bunch of money like Google can when they bring out the next iteration of AI. So today we're going to talk about what can an owner do, right? I mean, you can't magically increase reimbursement rates. It's really actually from a cash practice, if you're a cash practice, it's going to be kind of hard to raise rates even for cash, right? Because there's a cap on that about how much people are willing to pay before they go down the street. So today we're going to talk about how to retain your employees without being able to just pull that lever of here's a bunch of cash. You know, because I don't know about you, Brian, but I don't know very many PTs that are operating on a margin so big that they can just be like, eh, whatever. The only ones I know are hospitals, and that's because they just do a few more knee replacements and then they can cover their PT department.
Yeah, I think, and well, and I can tell you, I've talked to a lot of, you know, physical therapists in hospitals that are totally like jaded and nightmared because of administration bullshit and all that stuff, right? And then hate their job and want to leave.
Well, there is always that fact of if I don't have to pay more, why would I pay more? So they can if they really like the employee, but they're not going to if they don't have to.
No, right? For sure, because who's gonna challenge them? Who's gonna pay more, right?
So they have to do another $3,000 to be everyone in town, and then it's like, well, we're the highest paying, so take it or leave it. You know,
I think, you know, it's actually funny. I just had this kind of epiphany as you were talking about it, Owen. I would kind of agree. I think that one of the things that I think happens over time, right, is when we think about physical therapy and we think about, you know, going to work in places, I always thought of, well, if they're going to pay you more money out of the gate, it's probably because they're not a very good organization. They're struggling to attract people. And so the only way they can attract people is just paying them more money, right? Mm-hmm. And I think to a certain degree that still is kind of true. I think what has changed is people said, I always want to start my own cash-based practice to be a part of a cash-based practice. And what I've recognized, I was talking to this kid who actually hit me up on LinkedIn, who saw one of my posts and was like, basically, we signed a call and he goes, everybody's talking smack on insurance in college. Everybody's talking about the greatness of cash-based physical therapy and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, the irony, right? Because like shitty companies and working for shitty, like, we work with cash PTs. We've talked to people. You're in that realm. Like the reality of good management and bad management runs in any business. And there's just this stigma. And it just shows this disconnect. And I think because a lot of colleges are also hiring physical therapists that are like in a cash-based world, they'll do like cash-based and they'll be a professor. So they'll be like, oh, it's the greatest thing ever. I can treat and I can do this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. What cash base in my mind does is it offers flexibility, not more money. You know what I mean? Yeah. It offers like, cause, and I mean that for like the owner of the business, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So from a perspective of like the owner of the business, like, I'm going to bring up a great example. When you own a business in general, you are going to work more than if you don't own a business. Plain and simple. If anybody thinks that outside of being a business owner or running Evolution that I'm out here fucking drinking pina colada sitting by a pool, I'm here to very much promise you that is not what's going on, right? And Owen's laughing because he knows my life and knows that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah,
the reality of the situation, and again, if I see another fucking physical therapist on LinkedIn post, look at where I am by the beach, They're
I
such
know.
dickheads.
Take you through a day in my life that I make $100,000 a month,
I'm
even though I have
so
like real estate deals
I'm
and
so
fucking former
fuck it,
contracts.
this is the problem that's really happening, and I think is really hurting retention. I think there's this perception versus reality problem that I think
Well,
is occurring.
this is I always say it because I've been in both worlds, right? And you have too, is that no matter what, it's got to be a good business, right? You know, there's a few things. You got to provide the product that you say you're going to. And in cash pay, you really have to, because I mean, there is a hair trigger. If they're not getting better in two visits, like very few of those people will be like, "Ah, it's okay, I like you, I'll still pay you," right? The uber wealthy will.
Yeah.
But there's only so many of them to go around in a given area, right? And that's going to get less and less with all the new grads coming out and trying to be cash pay in 3 years. And then to talk about the professor part, like, yeah, I mean, I could be a professor right now. OCS, been practicing for 15 years. I'd be a great adjunct professor because I can say, yeah, I can just book myself free Tuesdays and Thursday mornings. And of course, I'm going to tell them it's great. But I'm also a much better therapist than them, right?
100%.
So like those that thing that coming out with that confidence, chiropractors don't have to worry about this. They're not really competing with insurance, right? They get maybe reimbursed for 10 minutes of their time, right? So a new chiropractor can come out and start right away cash based because everyone's cash based. PTs, you are fighting against insurance. So that is something that just from a strictly clinical standpoint of somebody leaving, that they really have to consider. Like, do your patients actually all get better within or better than the time frame? Because a lot of doctors don't really care, right? I mean, they care, but they're not like, oh my God, you didn't get Mrs. Smith better. I'm gonna make sure that I take all my patients from you. Some do, but most don't, right? Their MAs make the decision. Whereas a patient paying you, they're the physician at that point. They're the one saying, you haven't got me better in three visits. I'm not paying you anymore. And there goes your income stream, right? So I really like, as much as I am a cash pay PT, I'm kind of like the anti-cash pay PT, right? Where not so much that I want to go to insurance, there are headaches in that, but at the same time, man, the grass is always greener is a funny way of kind of using it. And everyone always uses that sort of, what is it, saying, idiom, metaphor, whatever it is.
Well,
But
let me ask
it's
this
about what
on
you do to it, right?
for sure. Let me ask this on, man, because for those who heard Owen's intro, I actually think we've done podcasts where you go back and listen to Owen's job, and I actually have some thought process on it. I know he doesn't have any employees now, but his life before this was managing people, and like I've listened to Owen do coaching calls with me, obviously, and doing different stuff and talking to different people. Owen clearly understands the concepts of how to, I don't want to use the word cater,
Keep
because
people with
cater.
me without money.
Yes, yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
that's probably the best way. Not even keep people without money, because like that kind of feeds into the, oh, the insurance, blah, blah, blah. They don't pay people. That kind of plays into it. More so, I think how to lead teams and retain people, right? Like that is clearly the way to do it. And so in the squeeze, you're now on the other side, right? Owen the manager, or I mean, obviously you're an owner now, but Owen the manager would be the exact same fucking guy managing and growing a team in the cash-based world or in the insurance-based world, I'm assuming. But I'm curious, and it's a two-part question. One, take people through, like, here are some of the things I would do that I think are super important for retention. And then two is, what are the differences you think between the insurance side and then the cash side when it comes to retention?
All right, so to talk, the most important thing I would always tell managers under me. So I was a regional director in a bigger system. So there was a CEO and a vice president of operations above me. So I wasn't the head of the company where we kind of, you know, you make the big speeches and all that stuff. But I was kind of a middle manager at regional, and then in the clinic, it was a big enough clinic that I was kind of a pseudo middle manager. And at that level, the number one thing is purpose. Your entire job is to convey purpose from the top to the person delivering the service, right? And that would always keep in my mind. Any time that I would talk to somebody and they would be frustrated, you know, in the break room and say, oh man, you know, I had like 15 patients today or blah, blah, blah. I'd say, okay, like, did you have 15 scheduled or 15 seen? Oh, 15 seen. Awesome. Okay. Hell yeah. Good job. I know it sucks. Let's find a way for you to be, let's do something for you because that was a shitty day. right? Or at least that was a day that was harder than most, right? But then I would kind of come back maybe 3 or 4 days later and say, like, oh, awesome, man, you got 8 today, like evened out, right? And you kind of think of that, what's our purpose? Our purpose at that point was no techs, no trainers, don't kill your PTs. Like, we try to keep it at like 10, 11 visits per day per PT. So our mission statement was that. So I always made sure that I circled back and had those conversations about it. And really, our biggest purpose was take our knowledge, help the community, right? Make everybody better, do it in a fun way so that we don't want to kill ourselves coming to work. And just keeping that purpose in mind, the entire goal of my job was to keep every other person happy, right? And you had to understand their strengths and then play to them, right? So I had one PT who was super good at like research and developing programs and all that, and I was like, great, I'm gonna find a way to see if I can argue for that in the budget, right? When I wasn't the owner. But if I was the owner, I would have been like, okay, in 3 months, we're gonna save $1,000 a month so that I can spend $3,000 on you not seeing patients and figuring out how to create this program, right? But I would tell that to them. So I think the biggest mistake managers make is they don't explain their thought process, and you don't explain the like thoughts of like, God, he's a lazy son of, whatever, because that should be your initial reaction, but it shouldn't be your prevailing thought. Your prevailing thought should then be like, okay, they're probably a good person. They probably want to do better. They're probably burned out. Let's find a way to help them, right? And that was kind of the way, because I had no real control over the money. It was really much the CFO and all that stuff did. This is the percent we're willing to do because we're trying to get bought by private equity and all that stuff. But I did have control about their day-to-day life. So I just thought that was my main kingdom.
It makes sense, right? I mean, because it allows you also the ability to listen at the ground level of what people want and need, and then adjust accordingly, which makes
Yeah, and
total sense.
you can't sit there and be like, oh, he complained and what the hell about this person? Like, you have to legitimately think like, okay, like given any reasonable person who, especially someone who's gone through 7 years of school, is trying to do their best, right? In either a clinical way or whatever. And they at some level either feel that they're not compensated in recognition or money. And if they're realists, they understand, okay, there's not a big money swing. Like, yeah, I could go to cash and all that stuff, but it's like, yeah, but then you also have a shit ton more hours, right? And uncertainty and all that other stuff. So yeah, for the one person that goes cash, there's gonna be five people that'll never go cash, but they'll threaten it, right? So then you say, okay, like, why do you think that's better? And you kind of walk that down, and then you will eventually get to a conversation where it's like, oh, really? You say you want to go cash, but really you just hate the fact that like you have to stay extra for notes. Cool. Let's work out a plan that we can afford an AI scribe in the next 3 months. How does that sound? Right. And then, getting past that, like they must be X, and then coming down to they're a reasonable human being. Let's have a conversation was always the way that I kind of like the mindset that I went into when I had someone who I couldn't just throw money at and be like, because that never works. You throw money at them and then they get more of a percent raise on it, and then you as the owner are dying, right? Because they're making 60% of salary cost, right? And then it's like, well, okay, we make zero profit on this guy. And then everyone else wants that same number, right? So for the health of the business, you can't just throw money at people because you're going to screw yourself. But employees don't know that, or they don't care about that. So you have to make your
The bigger word on that is employees don't care about that. That's exactly what I'd say because it's not their job to care,
But they have to
right?
care about you, right? And that's the thing. They have to think that you are a good enough human being, a good enough business owner that's not trying to, like, this is why, nobody should be driving a fucking Ferrari as a PT, right? They have to see that you're trying as hard as you can within your stated bounds to do this. And sometimes you're not going to win. Like, yeah, they got to pay bills. Like, they're going to go, but they will last for another year or two if they think that you're doing the best you possibly can with the health of the business in mind. Because it's capitalist America. Everyone knows that, like, you have to keep the business going, right? So as long as you explain that thought process and you say, this is why I'm doing this, I think that goes a long way. And it's not going to save everybody, but then they're going to go to, like, I mean, maybe they are born for cash pay PT. Maybe they're a great marketer and great PT and they can get a lot of people better than hell yeah, man. Go get your shit, right? But most of the time they're not. And then they go to like a high volume practice and then they come back in a year. So.
Yeah, I also think to your point, one of the things I know I've talked about with you, and one of the main reasons why you left to go in the cash-based world was mainly the lack of growth and the
Oh,
ability to
100%.
continue, right? And so,
You
I
have to
was told
find ways
this.
to give them something to shoot for.
Yeah, I mean, you told this story, right? That basically you had a career opportunity, but you had to leave Arizona, and you're like, I don't want to leave it. I love here. I know your wife's from there, right? Like in that capacity. So I think also, to me,
Well, I
when
was
it
also at a unique position where, like, I was interviewing. They already had their kind of tap on the shoulder guy, and I threw off every single person all the way up the chain. To the point that I had to interview with the CEO of the national brand. And basically, he had to be like, I don't know. Right. So I'm in a different situation than a staff PT would be. But even then, you have to be like, okay, you're not going to be the manager because I'm the manager, but let's find ways for you to head up clinical education or, and then give you a pay bump if we hit these goals and people get more certificates that I can market. Right. Those types of things that you can do day to day.
Yeah, no, mainly the reason I bring it up is one of the things that I've also recognized, I think it's an important thing for me this year to focus on is, when people, and listen, at the end of the day, for business owners listening out there, and it's a good note to think of is, you're going to hire people. And listen, we work with people in insurance-based physical therapy and cash-based physical therapy. Retaining clients is one of the biggest things that they have a problem doing. And by the way, that's not just in the healthcare sector or physical therapy sector. That's all over the friggin' planet in every company, right? Getting good talent, keeping good talent. Like that's a big problem no matter what. I think the difference in the physical therapy side is, generally speaking, just attracting enough candidates to even find a good person is sometimes tricky, right? Whereas like, in the finance world or business world, there might be 100, 150 candidates for a job. So, to find that good person is just a little bit of a different find. Versus for us, it's more of like a, hey, is this one or two or three or four people that applied, or any of them any good? But I think on the flip side, when you have good people and you want to retain them, it's talking to them on a, I think the one, it's two things. Talking to them about growth patterns that occur within a company and how they can grow with you and how they can kind of be rewarded. And again, that capitalist society, well, if I just keep growing the business in this capacity or keep growing with you, this is how I win too. So everybody wins. But I think the other flip side of it is, if I can't, if and the inability to grow, kind of what you're talking about. I also think the aspect of employee, like I just found this with an employee the other day was, his original goal with us was to start this one type of different program. We kind of set stuff up. And then what I do find that's happening is a lot of people, especially younger generation PTs, and I don't mean to be the get off my lawn guy, but I am noticing this whole like, hey, we're not having success with this instantly. So this is my new career path that I want to build into. And they start catching some momentum with that. And they're like, oh, I want to do that. And so it's that shiny object syndrome. Like there's not this like learning through failure and growing. It's like, well, this will work or that'll work or this won't work, right? So how do we continue to build that way? And so to me, I think that's part of it, dude. I think part of it is also like the inability to give people career growth and paths within your organization, but two is making sure that you're constantly checking in on those goals and making sure have they changed at all? Is there anything new? What can I help you with? Blah, blah. And I think that matters as well. But I think, you're talking about some other appreciation, recognition, and financial pieces, which I think is also massive, right? It's a delicate balance. And it's also hard. I mean, it's harder than ever, right? I think
Well,
in
and this is where I talk a lot about owners really have a hard time transitioning to managers, right? Because, and we've talked about this a bunch, but essentially you're very good at getting new people in and you're the man, right? But then you have to pivot so hard. Picture who's your best early business owner, right? It would be someone who can market, who does great with social media, who, gets out and, shakes hands, kisses babies, all that. Well, that person, the best manager is someone who can read every single person in his clinic or her clinic and know how they want to be communicated with. Like what level they want to. So you may hire somebody and there's someone that wants you to come in and say, "Hey, tell me about your day." Like, "Hey, tell me about this." "Oh, okay. Actually, oh, that's awesome. Hey, how are your kids?" "Oh, great. Anyway, we got to talk about how many units you're billing of Therex, right? Like, Is there anything there? Versus then you have to go right next door to the next guy at his note, doing his notes, and you have to be able to like, hey, listen, Jim, your notes are this. It needs to be better here, and I want this done by tomorrow, right? And he doesn't want you asking about his kids. He wants boom, 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 boom. And those are communication styles. You got to learn all that stuff. And people just don't naturally switch to that. It's like, so I'm the opposite way. I was that, right? And now, through all our stuff here, I've learned how to market basically by knowing you, right? Like your ability to market and grow a business has been absolutely like I've stolen a lot of your stuff.
Of course.
But that's the thing that you need to get is if you aren't good at it, understanding it, but then at the same point, knowing that you could be the best at it and people are gonna leave.
Yeah,
Shit you
for
can't control. People
well,
gotta leave,
and
you
I
know?
think that's something you talk about. Like I was talking about this with some people. We're I'm being asked to do some writing for a local magazine, and one of the things that I think about that you were just talking about just now is like they asked me a question like, "What's the biggest pain point like in your business?" And it's like a constant. It's just, there's not really like big pain points. It's more of like we want more patients and we want more physical therapists to fulfill those patients, and it's just a fucking circle. And so to your point of what we just talked about is. You know, one of the other things we've talked about a lot on this podcast is sales and marketing and how to get patients and blah, 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 and all that stuff. On the flip side, it's also one of those things where it's like, hey, while doing that, it's like, all right, cool. What I want to work on is also trying to retain people and become a manager as well and grow from that perspective also. So, I mean, I think that's a really good piece to kind of talk about within what we're saying is. You know, it's a two-way street, and it's hard. It's hard to be good at everything. And by the way, I also think that most PTs are not good at everything, and nor should they be, right?
Most
It's
people aren't.
well, exactly. And it's not meant to be like, hey, I'm some unicorn, so I can build this massive business because I'm good at multiple layers of shit. That's not how it works. It's like mainly what you need to do is focus. I honestly, personally say you should focus on what you're really good at. And then push out the things you're not good at to other people. And if you don't unload that stuff specifically, what ends up happening is then essentially what ends up happening is you can't really grow because you're bottlenecking the certain point into the business.
Yeah, and when you get higher up, your main job, a good CEO or leader or whatever, is facilitating other people to do their best job, right? So you become this kind of like, I don't want to say kingmaker, but you know what I mean, like this kind of like hand of God, right? Where you're like, okay, I have no idea how to make a millennial or a Gen Z feel like happy and this is a cool place at work, but I can hire a marketer that does,
Yeah, for
you know.
sure. For sure.
And my job then doesn't become the marketing. Like, yeah, I want to make sure they're not doing something that's completely off of what I want my company to do. But then my job is just making sure, okay, like, what are your metrics? What do I want from you? You know, in terms of new patients, but also in terms of making us feel like a cool ass place to be, right? Some of the Apple's one of the coolest companies, you know, you could possibly think of, and it's run by like a 65-year-old dude for the past since like the last like 40 years, right? Like those see Tim Cook and Steve Jobs did not know what was cool, right?
For sure.
But they hired a lot of people who did.
Well, and it makes sense when you think about it from the perspective you just brought it into. It's like it's so many different aspects of how businesses can be successful and how they can grow and continue to build. And I always say this, I'm like, not everything is fucking sexy. You know what I mean? Like SEO is not sexy, right? Doing stuff on some of the best things we're doing now is just making phone calls to patients and saying, hey, like, do you have fitness goals and blah, blah, blah. And just being right place, right time. Like you're just checking boxes and cranking people. And you might make 100 phone calls, but you're going to get 2 clients out of it. And it's like, well, is that 100 calls worth it if you're getting 2 clients out of it? And the answer is hell yeah. So it's like, there's an aspect where you can leverage your size and growth and so forth in that capacity. And I think that's a huge piece of it as well. So, yeah, no, I think these conversations are great because the fundamentals of how you can grow and build and it makes a absolute ton of sense when it comes to that kind of stuff. So
Well, and the best thing, you know, from like an actionable advice of somebody if they're listening to this and they're like, okay, I got like two employees and one of them just left, right? We have a few of these in our mentorship group. You know, understanding that, like, or one of the things that I think has been the most helpful is actually getting very good at hiring, which is essentially just marketing, but to physical therapists, right?
Yes.
And because there's going to be that rule of small numbers. Like I said, I hired 100 PTs. You kind of know what works and what doesn't. If someone leaves in one clinic, you're like, cool, I got like three other interviews I got to do for clinic C, D, and E, right? But if you're the only one and that's the only person that you show up and they leave, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe, what did I do? I must have done something terrible and like this and this and this and this. And then you find out 3 months later, it's because like their girlfriend dumped them and they wanted to move to the other side of the city where their ex lives, And it's like, but I'm not going to do anything about that, So, the rule of small numbers is going to make that feel huge, right? But then when you get like higher up and bigger size, it's like, okay, what do I really care about? Can I attract good talent? Can I land them when they call me? Because you need to have that quote unquote always be hiring mentality. Because people are going to leave, and sometimes it's going to be for stuff that you can't control. I mean, even when you say like, oh, they leave to start their own practice, or they go to home health, or they go to hospital based or something, like you can't control that, right? Like people are going to look on Instagram and see people saying how great it is, right? Or Reddit or whatever. My God, if you ever go on our physical therapy, it's just a massive amount of people complaining about their lives. If you don't do it, because it's just like
Don't do it.
you feel, no, if you ever worry about like why new grads all think like the profession's going to hell, it's that whole subreddit is basically just like, this is my shitty ass owner and blah, blah, blah. So anonymity is amazing what it'll do for people.
I think that's a
But
big part of it too, is social media in general. We look at the grass is greener, and everybody, you see this young person killing it online, you're like, oh, I could be like them too. And it's like,
well, and this is the
like,
problem, right?
yeah.
Communication has gotten so much better that think about it this way, right? When we were coming out of school 15 years ago, how in the hell would I have known about a Mill clinic in Nebraska? Didn't go to school with anybody who moved to Nebraska, didn't do anything like that, all that. Didn't even know the clinics that were in Nebraska, right? Now I just open my phone and I see how shitty Omaha, Nebraska Mills are, right? And, then it also goes for all the people who are shilling all this, like, I can do 100K in a month. Why can't you lazy SOB? And it's like, well, that guy never would have crossed our mind 15 years ago
Totally.
because the three other people that heard about it would have been like, oh, that's bullshit. He's just like using real estate stuff. Or you would have some guy who's like, oh, I can make your cash practice. This is my playbook. And like three or four people through, somebody experienced would be like, oh, yeah, I mean, that's fine if you want a good job, but that's not a business, right? So, like, it would have got filtered naturally. Now it's just from their mouth to your eyes. And these, unfortunately, new grads are seeing all of that. And they're like, well, this must be what normal is. And then just, I mean, I could go on a whole tirade about like newspapers and why having one newspaper in a town is better than everyone having a Twitter handle. But like, it's the same thing with us, right? Is that it looks doom and gloom and everything's awful. But then when you actually walk into most of these physical therapy clinics, like most people are like, yeah, it's good. It's a good job. I like my people here. It's a good vibe, right? Some of this is just, it's just massively overblown because the internet gives everybody an equal voice, which again, democracy, Arab Spring, all awesome. But at the same time, like it also leads to fucking brain
Yeah, for
rot.
sure. Well, and also, you have to believe everything that's on the internet. I mean, that makes total
Oh, of
sense.
course. This
Like,
guy
why
said it,
not?
and he was very passionate about it. So it must have been his boss was evil and they are all terrible. And it was never his fault ever. It wasn't the fact that he didn't show up and that he told Mrs. Smith that her hair looks bad and, all this other. Oh, it must be my boss. They're
Yeah.
evil, money grubbing, you know what's.
I
I'm like,
know. It's funny you say
bullshit.
that. I actually saw this thing today, and I was like, I saw two things today. One that was PT related with a disc that I was like, oh my God, like, do I even get involved? And then the other one was, this is the country's world best, the world's healthiest cheeseburger, right? And it was like loaded with French fries. There's beef tallow and seed oils, and they use sourdough bread. And I was like,
Oh God. All
bro.
right. Now our comment section is
I
gonna
was like,
blow up
that's what I'm
so
saying. It's getting fucking. I'm
bad.
like, this is. It's. I'm like, I'm
Don't
looking
come
at it. I
after
go.
beef
It's.
tallow.
It's a delicious, looking cheeseburger, but it's still loaded with fat, my friends. Like, healthy is not the way I would fucking bring that up. Anyway,
But think about this. This is what owners have to deal with.
I
They
know.
never had to deal with this,
No, you're
even
right.
7 years ago, right? So this is where you as an owner have to be able to kind of counteract that with actual real life connection and
Yeah, for
real
sure.
life being like, how do I find a way to help you? And that's why I always thought that process was really good about me saying, look, I'm smart, but I'm not the smartest guy. And how do I get, this is the problem I need to solve for me to be a good manager. You are here and you're helping me. Do we make it so you have a happy day and we all get this goal, right? Because if I get this goal, then that means we get pay raises. If I get this goal, that means we get a force plate. If I get this goal, that means we. So you always relate it back to something that will eventually be something fun for them. Now, when you're doing your budgets and financials, you should almost always have an administrative cost. And that's where the things for like the money you put away for a new clinic or something that like someone doesn't really care about if they're just trying to be the like best PT in Darien. They don't really care that you're going to open something in Ridgefield. But like, you should always have like you should have exposed budgets, right? Like your lease manager should be able to see like what's coming in, what's going out, what we're spending money on electricity, like things like that, so they can help manage that. But there should always be a line that says administrative, and that's essentially your salaries for your leaders, right? And it's whatever financials you need to be able to grow the company, right? So it's not profit we take so I can make blah blah blah, but at the same time, like, people are going to understand, hey, this guy started this. Like, if you take 130 grand or 200 grand, my boss was taking like, more than that, but not obscene. But we all knew that at the end, like when she sold it, she's going to be more than fine, right? So you should have some exposure of that stuff so that you can have those conversations of like, all right, this is how much we spend here, 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 and here, and this is how the math works out. This is why I do this. I'm not doing it because I don't like you and I want more money. I'm doing it because like we need to grow, right? And these are our budgets. So I always get like kind of thrown when people don't at least expose like their frontline managers to their P&Ls. I don't know if you do it or not, so sorry if you don't, but
No, I
at least
think I,
yeah,
yeah,
but
I think the, you know, it's funny because I go back and forth on it all the time with P&Ls, and the issue is that I think the problem is until you, here's what I would say about what Owen just said. The reason I generally stay away from like tons of transparency around P&Ls is sometimes they're a little bit confusing, and so if I look at what someone's making, what someone else is making, what we're bringing in versus that, I think that the issue becomes that, you know, for instance, say I get an $11,000 check from one thing, and then someone's like, "Well, you got that check." It's like, "Well, hold on. In a vacuum, in this minute, like
yeah.
we do not get $11,000 per treatment. This came from a big group, a big blah blah, and there was
Oh,
all
okay.
these, you know what I mean?" So I think
So
the problem.
we always did accrual based accounting. So we would have P&Ls based on like how many visits did you see? This is our average per visit, and then this is how much money we made this month. And then there would be an actual financial P&L where it would be like in February, we got $100,000 because Medicare finally figured out their December. Because everyone was on vacation and now they figured out that they're going to do it. And then, so like February looks amazing, but there was 19 business days, or 20 business days, right? So like we would have that for like the CFO and the board and all that stuff. But like we would always have like a kind of employee facing P&L because that's like demotivating. Like it would suck if they had a busy ass month. And then it's like, oh, we only brought in like $4,000. Well, yeah, because BCBS is a piece of shit. But like,
And that's what
so
I
we
found
always
is
did accrual-based accounting for our P&Ls, and then there was always like an actual like number.
I think that's a piece where it's like you, because like we're not a productivity driven company where we look at productivity and like be like, "Look what you did, look what you did, look what this person did versus what they did." You know, for us, much like we've kind of talked about is like, you know, somebody having worse productivity than someone else or vice versa. For us, it's much more around like, here's what we get per average visit, here's the idea, here's how we grow, here's how we don't grow, and then we do those wildly important goals and build it around there. But yeah, and I think that helps just give more clarity. With my fitness guys, I'm a little bit more transparent. I'm like, here's what this clinic brought in, here's what this did, and here's the projections, here's what this will look like. Because for them, like, it's like, hey, I want them to know, like, if they move the needle, I will pay them more money. But that's different on the fitness side because it's such a cash-based system. By the way,
Well, and
problem they
remember, your
maintain.
PTs can't change how much they're worth, right? And that's the biggest, and I think that's the massive frustration with insurance. And that's why everyone's like, oh my God, cash pay and like all that stuff is because if you're good enough, you can raise your rates, right? Now, if you're not, you can't. And no, that's a whole other
And
conversation, right?
that and by the way, that's the conversation I think that's a whole another set, which is like there's
Yeah.
you got these people that are charging. I think what is coming for a cash PT, there are people, to Owen's point, that aren't prepared, are charging this amount of money. And what's going to happen is the public is going to figure this out quickly, being like, wait a minute, what's going on? Why am I paying for this thing when it's not really helping me? You know what I mean? I've had that happen. I've had patients that have come back to me, they're paying X amount of dollars out of pocket. Then they come see me and they're like, wait, my insurance will cover this? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah,
And
the
all of
whole
a
model
sudden they're
falls
like,
apart when you have a really good insurance PT in town.
exactly. And I say this all the time. By the way,
it's
all you cash PTs in Fairfield County, Connecticut, I'm coming for your asses. I'll be like, I say it all the time. I'm competitive as fuck and I'm coming for your ass.
But I
Just so
mean,
we're
that's the
clear.
thing,
But
right?
yeah, no,
Like,
I totally
if
agree.
you are good and all the doctors know, and you're at a clinic that only makes you see 11, and yeah, okay, two of our patients are double booked, but pretty much all the time I can find appropriate amount of time for somebody, or they do what you do, where it's 40 minutes one-on-one. It's like, that's your competition, right? And that's a very, I mean, yeah, and this is always the thing. This is part of the reason we started this podcast is because everyone tried to make it look simple. And then when you look at what they did, it was like, oh, I started a cash pay practice in 2012. It's like, okay, you're in a metro area of 5 million people and you were one of three cash pay PTs. Like, yes, you did very well. Good job, right? But that's not gonna be the reality here. And oh, by the way, we've been riding a massive S&P 500 jump, probably the longest ride we've had. So like, everyone's a genius in a bull market, you know.
Agreed. Agreed.
So
So cool, man. Well, listen, this is, we rambled on a bunch of different topics. From the
yeah, someone
retention.
listening to this is like, how do I keep my people? They're just like, P&L accrual accounting.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll build a bullet point it real fast, and Owen, you can put it on there. Retention in my mind in a vacuum. Owen kind of talked about it, which is trying to talk to people, appreciate your people, recognize your people, right? Pay them when you can, pay the A people. I totally agree with all that concept. That's something we do. For me, it's talking about career growth, talking about what they want to do, talking about the things they love to do, and trying to make sure that, you give them a path they can grow within your company. And different things that are passion projects they can build on, and giving them a model that they can succeed in and want to succeed in and don't get burned out in. But at the end of the day, I always joke about this all the time with every even PT that I interview, is that I hope that every employee that we ever hire works for us for the rest of their career before they retire. But the reality is PTs are going to come and go at times too, right? And so you hope that those A people stick with you and help you grow, and you can reward them as best as possible. And we try incredibly hard to do it all the time in our profession, but I also think that it's, just isn't in the cards for every single person, and that's totally fine too. So, I think what actually is cool on this podcast, we didn't talk about anything negative. We didn't get into non-competes or non-solicitation. We didn't get into how to whip people and how to do all that stuff, which I know is out there, but we didn't chat about any of that. So I think that's cool too.
But if you lead with purpose, and that's a very fluffy thing, but I'll bring it down to real terms. If you have conversations about metrics, about pay, about where the company's going, and you always bring it back to the fact that you started your clinic to be a better option for patients in your city, to be able to have control over how care is given, or as much control as you possibly can, right, without being a bazillionaire. And if you bring every conversation that you have, every frustration a PT brings to you, every whatever, and you bring it back to, yeah, but if we do this right, then we make money and we buy this, right? And we help the community. We survive. We get bigger so that there's more of us and less of the mills, right? And if you find a way to have those conversations with your people and you do it all the time, every day, you should always be thinking, how do I bring this back to, I am helping my community. We are a better option than the mills. The way that we survive is we do X, right? Then you will probably find yourself retaining more people because they will believe that you are doing the best you can with a reasonable take-home pay to be able to create something that helps people versus helps yourself.
Love it.
There you go. Mic drop.
Physio-growth.com. See ya. No, I love
There you go.
it. And that, listen, we, again, our plug here with Physio Growth is we don't just pull these topics out of thin air. We talk with, you know, I was talking on a coaching call with a bunch of people who were talking about this yesterday. So I said to Owen, I was like, you know what, let's chat about it because it's something that is normal. By the way, Cash, physical therapist, who's struggling with retaining people, and you know, obviously for us, we're always focused on it as well. And it's an industry problem for sure. And by the way, not even an industry problem, it's a workforce problem. Everybody wants to retain good talent. So good topic today. We help guide people through it. Physio-growth.com, the physio guys on Instagram,
Hit us up.
and check out the school group in the links below.